I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday.
All of these issues have been present for years.
Meetings are nice. Action is better.
High tension over low classroom temperatures at Tuesday's Baltimore School Board meeting. Today, a conversation about the heating crisis in Baltimore City schools. School officials blame the problem on old buildings and underfunding. Governor Larry Hogan points to what he calls mismanagement and ineptitude. So what's really going on and what should be happening moving forward? Luke Broadwater is a reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Frank Patinella is the co-chair of the Baltimore Education Coalition and senior advocate with the Education Reform Project with the ACLU of Maryland. Shamarla McCoy is the director of education policy with Advocates for Children and Youth. They join me in Studio A. I'll also speak to Delegate Maggie McIntosh when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Last week, images of Baltimore City students shivering in parkas as they sat in their classrooms were beamed nationwide as the national media alighted upon the lack of heat in as many as 60 school buildings throughout Baltimore. City School CEO Sonia Santelises and School Board President Cheryl Casciani pointed to decades of underfunding that has resulted in putting off needed maintenance in the school system's aging buildings. And the extraordinary, sometimes sub-zero temperatures that we experienced last week as the cause of the problem. Governor Larry Hogan pointed to mismanagement and a lack of accountability in the city schools and called for another layer of oversight in the form of a newly created investigator general to be embedded in the Department of Education. Governor Hogan also announced $2.5 million in emergency aid for Baltimore schools. Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh directed the Department of Public Works to pitch in and help with emergency repairs, and she called on the business and philanthropic community to help pay for it. A student at Coppin State University, Samara Jones, started a GoFundMe page to raise money for space heaters and coats. In a startling article in the Baltimore Sun, Luke Broadwater reported that the city has returned nearly $66 million to state coffers that had been allocated for repairs. If money is short for needed repairs, how can this be? Many people concluded that the sub-zero temperatures outside exposed subpar performance by school officials. It's not that simple. Dr. Sonia Santelises, on whose desk the buck stops when it comes to Baltimore City schools, will be my guest for the hour next Wednesday. At that time, we'll have a chance to hear her perspective on the reasons for the disrepair of so many buildings and the reasons that the school system handled the crisis the way it did. She is unavailable to join us today because she and her senior staff, along with Baltimore City School Board President Cheryl Casciani, are in Annapolis at this hour talking to lawmakers about this and other challenges that the schools face. Today on Midday, it's my hope that we can shed some light on how we've gotten to this sorry place with our school infrastructure and the path to get out of it. We'll hear from the chair of the Maryland House Appropriations Committee, Maggie McIntosh, with whom I spoke yesterday afternoon. And joining me in the studio here are two leaders of the Baltimore Education Coalition, Frank Patinella and Shamarla McCoy. Welcome to you both. Nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
And Luke Broadwater of the Baltimore Sun is here as well. Welcome back, sir. Happy New Year.
Good afternoon.
You are welcome to join our conversation as well. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here on Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So, Luke, let me ask you to start by giving us a little recap of the reporting that you did about a week ago. The headline of that was, you know, $66 million that the state had allocated to the city. Mm-hmm. Somehow the city had to do what's called reverting it, meaning send it back to the state. Give us a little update on why that was.
Sure. So when the classrooms went very cold among 2 weeks of negative 20 degrees, below freezing temperatures. Many kids are sitting in the classrooms in parkas, very terrible conditions, a huge national embarrassment. We said, well, why is this happening? What can be done? So one of the things that I did was I looked through the budgets and the minutes of the Maryland State Construction Board's reports. And one thing I noticed is that Baltimore every year was rescinding funds at a much higher rate than the other jurisdictions, something like tens of millions of dollars each year. These are funds for HVAC systems, for roofs, for alarm systems, etc. And so I started making some inquiries. One of the things that the state officials were saying was, hey, we are allocating funds for projects. At the end of the year, the city comes back to us and says, basically, this project now costs more than we originally estimated, or we couldn't get the bid out in time, et cetera. And so we have to rescind the funds due to the current state rules. What city officials say is basically we're between a rock and a hard place because we are poorer than our surrounding jurisdictions. Our local government gives us less money up front. So we can't forward fund the projects like Baltimore County can and then ask the state for reimbursement. We have to estimate. So we got to project 2-3 years in the future how much these things are going to cost. And sometimes the costs of the project change, which happens all the time if you follow any type of capital projects. And then the state rules are so stringent that we end up having to rescind this money. And some of it doesn't get to the classroom. Now, what happens is, and this is going to get a little bit complex, but when they rescind the money, that project will get built eventually. It will go in one of the maybe next year or the year after that. But that project will often bump another project that would have been built otherwise. And so the net loss is over the 8 years, about $66 million.
So there's a backlog of things that the schools would like to repair but are unable to repair because of money. And part of the problem is this process of how the schools get the money, how they have to account for the money, and the time it takes to get the money. So I talked to Delegate Maggie McIntosh about this yesterday afternoon. She is the chair of the House Appropriations Committee. She represents the 43rd district here in the city. She is a member of the Kerwin Commission also, which has been charged with, among other things, recommending changing the formula by which the state funds public schools. So that's a conversation for another day, the Kerwin Commission. But Delegate McIntosh and I spoke about the current crisis in the Baltimore City schools yesterday afternoon. Delegate McIntosh, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
So let's talk first about the procurement process for the Baltimore City Public Schools when it comes to deferred maintenance on the buildings. It seems to be a very Byzantine process. Funds have to be approved by this interagency committee on school construction. We hear from folks that sometimes it takes 2 or 3 years for money for certain projects to actually make its way to the Baltimore City Public Schools. Is there any movement to change the process by which the Baltimore City Public Schools are reimbursed for capital improvements?
The irony here, to some degree, is that we have had the Knott Commission, which has been looking at school construction in Maryland, and the issue of this partial funding, in particular for projects that are seriously needed projects to protect the health and well-being of children, has come up during this Knott Commission. And they have, there will be a bill that comes out of the Knott Commission that makes recommendations that allows more whole funding for projects such as HVAC systems in schools. In particular, in jurisdictions, by the way, not just Baltimore City, but in jurisdictions that have little ability to forward fund the projects. And that, the lack of forward funding ability from a lack of help coming from the county because they're a poor county, and the idea of doing, you know, one-third on some of these projects.
And that's the division of the payments between the state, yeah, the city, and the school system.
That's exactly right. And here is a perfect example. I think, by the way, hats off to Cheryl Kashani, who is the head of the Baltimore City School Board, who wrote an excellent letter to the editor in the Sunday Sun that said, liken this problem to a poor family. You literally live from paycheck to paycheck, and then all of a sudden your air conditioner or your heat HVAC system goes up. The plumber comes out and says it's going to cost $6,000 to get a new HVAC system in, and you don't have that in a savings account anywhere. You can't forward fund it, so you go to the bank, and you get a loan. And the bank says, okay, we'll loan you, but all along the way, the city has to pay the interest on this. And then when it comes time to actually do the project may come in slightly over budget. Most projects have in recent years. They don't have the money to get the HVAC system in. Meanwhile, the bank, the state, is calling in the loan. So they have to cancel projects.
Do you expect that the bill will be introduced in this session, and what will the bill do? How will it change the process?
I do not know the precise recommendations, but I do know that they had addressed this in the commission, and a bill is being drafted as we speak to be introduced this session that will allow jurisdictions that cannot forward fund to have not partially paid projects, to be able to get the funding for the entire project so they can get it done and move on to the next one.
The governor appears to have concerns about accountability and mismanagement at the Baltimore City Public Schools. He's called for an investigator general to be appointed, a new piece of the bureaucracy to oversee these kinds of projects. This would be embedded in the Department of Education. What's your feeling about that proposal?
Well, first, he can call for this inspector general, but what the inspector general will find is what about 11 audits a year find of the Baltimore City Schools. You do realize that there have been a couple of years of recent that there have been as many as 11 audits done in 1 year. So he'll find, you know, what we know has existed in the Baltimore City Schools, which is that the process that we have just been talking about of partially funding projects doesn't work for poor jurisdictions because they don't have the ability to forward fund projects and get them done. And then secondly, they will find that the Baltimore City Schools for decades now, has not been able to have enough staff on board to keep up with the deferred maintenance needs in the school system. And you say, well, why don't they just hire 150 more people? Well, A, they can't afford to. If they did, that would come out of classroom instruction, which we don't want. B, it is actually, believe it or not, previous encouragement from state government to have them reduce, quote, administrative overhead. And in two or three cases, those reductions were made in the operations department, which has further exacerbated this problem.
When people read things like Luke Broadwater's piece in The Sun a week or so ago, which described the city sending back $66 million as an estimate because the money couldn't be used in time, the work wasn't done on time because of this, you know, bizarre process of procuring funds for these kinds of things. They point to that and they say, well, boy, this must be mismanaged. This must be a mess over there at North Avenue in the city schools. But what's your response to that?
Well, I think the mismanagement may fall on the IAC for not recognizing that the city can't forward fund, that giving partial funding for projects of a large magnitude is unhelpful. Many times the local match from Baltimore City, which is required, has been spent on other projects, and so they can't do this. But I will say this about Luke Broadwater's article in the Sun Papers and the headline. It was outright wrong that this is not at all, he didn't at all take into account the other side of the coin. What Baltimore City folks who are trying to administer these monies have had to face because of the IAC regulations and rules. And to be fair to the IAC, they're trying to prevent fraud and abuse. But they have gone so far in that direction that they have, again, hampered school systems that can't forward fund. And let me give you an example. Baltimore County spends about $116 million annually on, HVAC systems, doors, windows, roofs, so on and so forth. So their school superintendent and operations people literally, once the work's done, they just take the bill to the IAC, and the IAC writes out a check for it. But it's the county who is actually paying for these projects to get done. In Baltimore City, the city up until Mayor Martin O'Malley did not provide any substantial or any help with capital projects and operations. And Mayor Pugh had already proposed increasing the amount that the city helps the schools with. But it will never be, it can't be, because of the city's bonding capacity, it will never match what other counties do. And so you have a school system and a city who are trying to deal with a state IAC rules and regulations that work really, for the most part, against them.
And again, the IAC is this Interagency Committee on School Construction. Delegate Maggie McIntosh, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
It's Delegate Maggie McIntosh. She's the chair of the House Appropriations Committee. She represents the 43rd District in the General Assembly. That's in Baltimore City. Luke Broadwater, before we go to a break, she's not a big fan of the piece that you reported last week.
Sure, and I understand why she's not, but to say that the article is wrong is incorrect. There's nothing wrong in the article. She claimed in her comments that the school's side was not represented in the piece, and I would encourage her to read the entire article instead of just the, first few graphs, which she read, because the school side is represented in the piece.
And the school side is also represented in an editorial by the
school
board chair, Cheryl Kashani,
and
other articles.
Look, I get why people who advocate for increased funding for the Baltimore City schools wouldn't like that article. I get that. But that doesn't mean the article's wrong. What the article points out is a process that's not working for city students to get the repairs they need at their schools. And the response that I would think city leaders and state leaders would adopt is to try to fix that rather than denying that it's a problem.
They're down in Annapolis trying to do that.
Yeah, Frank Pantanella. That should have been the title of the article, because when people see headlines, oftentimes that's what comes up in the feed, and that becomes the narrative.
Mm-hmm. But Frank, before we take a break, because we do have to take a break, just your reaction to Delegate McIntosh's sort of summary of the problem. Does that ring true, given what you know working on the Education Coalition?
Absolutely. She gave a lot of detail there. I hope the public was able to digest that.
Okay, we will come back and help everybody understand it a little bit more deeply when we come back from a break. Luke Broadwater is here. He's a reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Frank Pantanella is the co-chair of the Baltimore Education Coalition and a senior advocate with the Education Reform Project with the ACLU of Maryland. Shamarla McCoy is the director of education policy at the nonprofit Advocates for Children and Youth. She's also a former teacher in the Baltimore City Public Schools. We'll have more on education and the Baltimore City Schools when we return. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on our program tomorrow, Maren Alsop, the music director of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, and Peter Chomey, its president and CEO, join me to talk about what's going on with the BSO. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick has a review of Inherit the Wind at Vagamond Players. They're here in Baltimore. Judy's Weekly Review, by the way, is usually part of our Thursday shows, but today we decided to spend the entire hour talking about the huge problem of aging buildings and infrastructure in the Baltimore City schools. And a reminder, next Wednesday, school CEO Dr. Sonia Santelises will be my guest here on Midday. My guests today are Baltimore Sun reporter Luke Broadwater, Shamarla McCoy. She's a former city school teacher who now works with the nonprofit Advocates for Children and Youth. Frank Patinella is here as well. He's a senior advocate with the Education Reform Project with the ACLU of Maryland and the co-chair of the Baltimore Education Coalition. You are welcome to join us. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday at WIPR.org. And to find us on Twitter, at Midday Tom Hall. Joining us on the phone now is Corey Gaber. Corey is a sixth grade literacy teacher at Southwest Baltimore Charter School. He's also a leader with Be More, that's Baltimore Movement of Rank and File Educators. Corey Gaber, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your time.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So talk a little bit about the school system's response to the problem of so many buildings. Some estimates are as many as 60 buildings that didn't have heat when we had that incredibly tough cold snap last week. What was it like being in the schools at that time?
I mean, basically, you know, what everybody said is that it was cold in there, and our building was luckily not as off as a lot of other buildings. So basically, you know, we made it work in the classroom. Kids last week put on hoodies. We relaxed the uniform policy. They put on jackets if they need to. And, you know, we took care of it so that we were comfortable and went back to work, which is what, you know, Baltimore City kids do every day. They face challenges that other kids don't do, that don't have to deal with, but they persevere and get the job done. So I was lucky enough that it wasn't an extreme situation. It was something that we could make an adjustment and deal with. And as far as the school system, you know, I thought it really revealed some problems with the fact that when you are so underfunded and you don't have the things you need and deserve to be able to respond to the situation, then you need a policy in advance to deal with that. And that's why Be More put out a statement with some specific recommendations that the school system could adopt to handle the circumstances they're in. And we've been happy to hear so far that those have largely been adopted since then.
We should mention that Dr. Santelises at the school board meeting on Tuesday, which was a very heated affair, responded to complaints about how the school system handled it in terms of communicating with parents. To her credit, she owned it. She did not shy away from it. There's been a lot of finger pointing in this episode, and she was not pointing fingers at that point. She said, "I'm committed to excellence, and excellence means acknowledging mistakes and learning from those mistakes. Last week, we should have communicated more quickly with our staff, families, and students. We should have had better protocols in place to handle concerns around actively changing facility conditions, and we should have articulated a clear standard." So what you're talking about, Corey Gaber, is ways that they can do that, and she sent a letter to parents just this morning that says that from now on, for example, principals will make sure that there are regular temperature checks throughout the buildings, and they will report on that status directly to operations staff. I mean, are you convinced as a teacher and as a person who's involved with this, you know, organization, Be More, that the system has learned a lesson here and that moving forward, because this probably won't be the last maintenance and facilities problems we have in the city in all these old buildings. Are you convinced that they're on the path to getting it right?
I'm convinced that the parts that are within their control, they are now making an effort to fix. Only time will tell, and we want to push to make sure those things that we ask for are not just exist in a letter and a commitment, but are codified into policy that can then be used to hold everybody accountable for. But up until this point, we're actually very happy about the changes that have been made and the ownership that's been taken since then.
All right, Corey Gaber, he is a sixth grade literacy teacher in the Baltimore City Schools. He's also a leader of Be More. That's the organization that's the acronym for Baltimore Movement of Rank and File Educators. Mr. Gaber, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
And Shamarla McCoy, the governor has either made direct accusations or has certainly insinuated that part of the problem here is mismanagement, lack of accountability, and ineptitude on the part of city school officials in particular. You're with Advocates for Children and Youth. You look at this closely. You used to be in the classroom. What's your response to that?
Well, let me first by quoting what he said, because I thought it was very interesting. Quote, Larry Hogan said, "Let me be clear. This is not to reward people responsible who have failed," end quote, in terms of him taking the $2.5 million and allocating that from the emergency funds. So what my question to Larry Hogan would be is, who are the people responsible? Is it just city schools? Because when we look at the problems in city schools, we have to inject a racial equity framework. We have a historic disinvestment in Baltimore City public schools, and it's not just because they're poor. It's because they are predominantly African-American. And when we're not talking in those terms, we really are hugely disconnected with the majority African-American population, which is Baltimore City. So it's very offensive that he is pointing the finger and blaming local officials when it is the right of city schools under our state's constitution, the city students, to have a fair, equitable access to education. So when you're starting to look at all the things that we look at ACY, you know, the discipline disparities and the so-called achievement gap, let's just be clear. White students in Montgomery County are not closed for a week because there's no heat. So this is where we start to see these challenges really pan out on a more, a broader level. And I would say that, and I would argue that, that we're really dealing with an equal protection issue right now. It's a little bit more than just funding. It's a little bit more than school construction. We're dealing with a equal protection argument. We have de facto segregation in Baltimore and in Maryland. And this is what's going on. Black students are not being given a fair opportunity to learn in the state of Maryland. And we need to inject that conversation.
There was a very powerful piece, I thought, in the Baltimore Sun, a letter to the editor from Christina Ross, who's at City Neighbors High School. She's a teacher there, as well as Cheyenne Zart, who's the principal over there. And they wrote in part, "These are students of color. These are students whose families are more likely to be poor. We set the expectations for all students to graduate college or be career ready, but then we allow policymakers to continue policies that make those achievements so much more difficult for students of color or students who live in poverty." So Frank Pantanella, the governor, said, for example, that last year the state's investment in Baltimore City schools was 3.5 times the state average. Per pupil state aid was nearly twice the state average. Overall, per pupil spending in Baltimore City schools is the fourth highest in the nation. It is, of course, more expensive to educate poor students than it is students in Montgomery County or other richer counties. But what's your reaction to the governor's insinuation or accusation about how the city's handling the money?
Right. Well, I think this is in line with what Chamarla just said. And I think there's a lot of misfacts being represented. You know, the city is not the fourth highest per pupil in the nation. He's using a Fox News Sinclair media number, and I believe that number came from the largest urban districts in the nation, which we know are notoriously underfunded. So, yes, we might be the fourth best funded within that group, but when I looked at the Census Bureau information from 2014, we are the 2,468th best funded district in the states. So
he also contends that, again, based evidently on a Fox News report, that North Avenue, the administration, has the highest administrative costs in the country. And there are an awful lot of people who dispute that contention as well.
Well, we asked the school system about this and for them to provide numbers, and they put out some information on this, and I would encourage the public to look at this. Their consultants that do this nationwide was able to compare headquarters cost in Baltimore City versus other districts nationwide, and they found that the city school's headquarters cost was in line with the average.
Let's go to the... I'm sorry, Luke Brabant.
Sure. I, oh. I, t- I, so, I took a look at that, and the school system's administrative costs, in my estimation, are not out of line with even other jurisdictions in Maryland. It was very similar percentage-wise to Montgomery County and Howard County. And in terms of the numbers that the governor was giving about fourth highest funded, I think that's right. He's using this old information about large urban school districts. In fact, Worcester County in Maryland has more money per student than Baltimore City schools do. And again, that's only talking about the operating costs, not the capital costs. Baltimore City actually has much lower capital money than the suburban school system.
And for what it's worth, the conversations that I've had with people in the school system over the last several days, it's a matter of funding. They don't have, as Delegate McIntosh was referring to, they don't have enough people looking at facilities issues in the school system. And part of it is because these are considered administrative costs. These are things that the state, Governor Hogan and others, have condoned the cutting of administrative costs. So maintenance is one of the first things that gets cut in a lot of school systems. And, you know, here we are, we have sub-zero temperatures and we've got boilers going up. I have not heard, for what it's worth, from anybody who thinks that there's corruption or mismanagement given the funds that people have in the Baltimore City schools mm-hmm. to handle the maintenance stuff. So, I've been asking.
I will say, Tom, there were criminal cases some time ago against.
Yeah, I'm talking recently.
Right,
yeah.
Sure. And the last audit did show a lot of financial problems in 2012. There hasn't been a state audit since then. The school system has done some of their own auditing, and they say they have clean books. The idea that any large institution doesn't have some problems, I think, is fanciful, right? I mean, we have problems at the Baltimore Sun. I'm sure there are problems at YPR. Like, there's going to be problems at any institution. But in terms of when you look at structural, overall, large, multi-million dollar amounts of funding, the studies are showing that not just Baltimore schools need more money, but frankly, some of the other school districts as well.
So you bring up WYPR. In our building, we have about 45 employees. Yeah. They've been trying to fix the heating system here since October, they still don't have it right.
We all got problems, yeah.
They still don't have it right. And here's, Dr. Sondalises is overseeing 80,000 people. So, yeah, you're right, Luke. Let's see if we can sneak in a couple of calls here. Heather in Baltimore, welcome to Midday. You've got a suggestion that might help. What is it?
Thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering why they can't have a living classroom and involve the students from Mervo or Dunbar or these other vocational technical programs studying plumbing and heating or electronics or the construction trades, instead of saying they don't have the money to hire the labor to do these repairs. And I'll hang up and take my answer off air.
All right. Thank you, Heather. I appreciate that. There's a suggestion. Use the kids who are learning HVAC, who are learning plumbing and electricity. Anybody have a reaction to that?
Sounds like a great idea. And I think Baltimore City Schools has a number of CTE programs that focus on the trades. And I believe they do have some amount of time in their buildings and doing internships with different groups. I can't tell you the extent and whether that's enough or whether more can be done. I think that's a question for the school system.
I know there's an awful lot of kids also studying urban farming, for example, and other things, outside of the sort of book learning, as we used to call it back in the day. Tom in Mount Vernon, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Good afternoon, folks. I thoroughly read Mr. Broadwater's article, and I found it to be unbiased, informative, and factual journalism in defense of Mr. Broadwater's article.
Also, thank you, Tom.
The headquarters building.
How much did he pay you, Tom?
Is the old Polytechnic Institute. That building's pushing 100 years old, and yet the headquarters building seems to be maintained just fine. What formula they use to maintain that building maybe should be applied to schools in Baltimore City. And third, if the city keeps giving away these tax breaks to the people who build projects along the waterfront, they're never going to get enough money to because they're saying they don't have enough money to put forward, for their projects.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for the call, Tom. And, it is. I think this brings up, here's a gentleman who seems to have at least, a partially visceral reaction to administrators in public mm-hmm. positions that they're somehow coddling themselves and they don't care about the kids. I just have to say, I do not get that impression when I talk to the people in the classroom, in the management at North Avenue, or on the board of the Baltimore City Public Schools. I just don't.
Yeah, I think that sentiment was reflected at the school board meeting the other night. A lot of people angry about people in power and how they're administering the funds. If I could just respond to the other point he made, which was about the tax breaks and how those affect the school's funding. That's an article that I did several years ago. And that has, on paper, Baltimore City has grown in wealth, but the money has not actually reached the classroom. And it's actually resulted in us getting less money in state funds 3 years in a row now. And again, in another article I wrote, which also affects this, is the casino money, which has not, in fact, as our casino came online, we've gotten less money as well. So those are two things that if there's legislation, or I believe plan on both those topics, which could result in more funds for the schools.
Yeah, and I will say I moderated a panel that included Delegate McIntosh and others. This is at Bolton Street Synagogue a month or so ago. And casino money was one of the things that they talked about as a legislative fix to try to somehow get that money to where it was promised it would go, which is for education. Frank, one final thought before we take a break.
Yeah, I just want to respond to the caller as well. It's a matter of simple math to understand that, you know, we can expect to see 60 boilers go up during the winter when temperatures drop. There's simply not enough money in the capital budget that comes through to fix these buildings. And they're at least, you know, they're billions of dollars, $2.4 billion to be exact, last estimate, in terms of the issues that they have to take care of now in terms of deferred maintenance. And most of them are health and safety issues. $1 billion of that is for HVAC, heating, and air conditioning. So you're getting maybe almost $50 million from the state and the city for capital improvements that does barely anything, just puts Band-Aids on the problem. And
you know, $52 million and a $2.5 billion need. That's, right. You know, as you say, do the math. All right, got to take a break. We'll come back and continue this conversation with Shamarla McCoy. She's the Director of Education Policy at Advocates for Children and Youth. She's also a member of the Baltimore Education Coalition. Frank Patinella is the co-chair of the Education Coalition. And Luke Broadwater reports for the Baltimore Sun. More on the status of Baltimore City Schools and your calls, 410-662-8780 to email us. Try midday at WIPR.org to find us on the Twittersphere at Midday Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WIPR.
Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. If you've just joined us, we're talking about the effect that the extreme cold had last week in nearly 60 schools in the city of Baltimore and the underlying reasons that city schools face such difficult long-term problems in so many of their aging buildings. Frank Patinella is a senior advocate with the Education Reform Project with the ACLU of Maryland. Shamarla McCoy is the Director of Education Policy with Advocates for Children and Youth. And Luke Broadwater's here. He reports for the Baltimore Sun. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday at WIPR.org. And our Twitter handle, at midday, Tom Hall. We want to go now to the phones. And Sharika Bolden, who's calling from Baltimore, she is the co-chair of the Baltimore Education Coalition, with which Frank and Shamarla are also aligned. Ms. Bolden, thank you for your call. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to place a national context to the conversation that we're having. I was looking at a report that was released from the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, I believe this week, specifically looking at public education funding inequity. And what they've noticed is that low-income students are often relegated to low-quality school facilities and that the majority of states do not allocate funding to high-poverty school districts. So they're calling for Congress to specifically invest in facilities as equitable environments for students. So as we're looking at this in Baltimore City, I think it's important for us to pull back and see how this is playing out on the national stage. This is not something that is just specific to this district, but it's something that's happening within a larger context of our country.
That's a good point, Sharika Bolden, and we know that you are in a school, which is why we heard a little announcement from the principal behind you. That's okay. But Sharika, I appreciate that call. Thanks so much. This is a national trend, as Sharika Bolden observes, and there's also, we've got specific local problems. For example, it's pretty well established that the school system has more buildings than it needs for its student population. And of course, every time Dr. Santelices suggests closing a school, the people in that neighborhood, the kids who go to that school, are upset. They don't want to close their school. They like their school. And it's sometimes a matter of transportation and getting to the school. But the other thing is that the dilemma that we face with all of these old buildings, for example, Patterson High School. Next year, they're breaking ground for a new school, but they need an HVAC system, right? So do you want to throw good money after bad? You know, Shamira, do you want to fix the HVAC system in a building that you're not going to be using in 3 years? It's a tough dilemma.
It is. I taught at one of Lake Clifton campus, and the population went down dramatically over the past, 5-10 years, and they ended up doing the same thing, splitting it into two schools, big, huge building, half the building not being used. This is a local decision. You know, what the community is saying is that if you need to close a school, try to keep us all together, because when you're in neighborhoods that are oppressed, disenfranchised, whatever term you want to use, there is a trust issue. So parents, they get used to the teachers and their classmates and the culture. And so this is what causes the outrage. And also there's a problem with communication. Oftentimes these decisions are made on such a high level, and we're not communicating effectively with the community that it affects. And so it's just, oh, we're closing the school. You know, it's not a process that the community feels that they are a part of, and it affects them.
You know, communication is often alluded to as a problem, and Dr. Santelices even acknowledged communication issues in what happened last week. But as we saw at the school board meeting on Tuesday night, that people are just upset. They're just mad. And when they're in that place, it's very difficult to have a conversation about it. It's a tough row to hoe, so it's one thing to say that, you know, we need better communication. It's another thing to actually have communication with people who, you know, feel these things so viscerally. But I take your point. I want to go to Jerry in Baltimore. Jerry, welcome to Midday, and I understand that you work in maintenance in the city schools. Thanks so much for calling. What's your perspective?
Yes, my perspective is that they devalue maintenance guys and do not give us the proper training. We have training when we come in. And then they also don't pay us enough. So we don't really, so it's like a lot of guys probably don't do enough work to get everything done because we're being devalued.
And do you think that if the training were better or if the salaries were better, you would have people who could do the work in a more timely way, or do the work at a higher quality?
Higher quality, much more professional? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you know, a matter of money, which is what the school system points to, maintenance costs include the salaries for you and your colleagues in the maintenance system. Well, I appreciate that perspective, Jerry. Thank you so much for calling. Luke Broadwater, the governor mentions, you know, how much the city as a jurisdiction contributes to the school system. Cheryl Cashani, the president of the school board, was very quick to praise Mayor Pugh in this particular crisis. She jumped right in, got the Department of Public Works. This is not their problem. Mm-hmm. This is not their thing, but she got the Department of Public Works to help out fixing schools so that we could get them back online ASAP. She went to people like Calvin Butler at BGE and other business people, other philanthropic entities, and tried to get some help. So I think the school system was very grateful to the mayor for that decisive action. But the fact is, they contribute 17% of the general fund of the city to the schools. That number is scheduled to go up to 19% in the next fiscal year. But as the governor and other people in Annapolis have alluded to, the average contribution by a jurisdiction is like in the 40s. It's like 43%. So again, the city, you know, is going to say, well, we just don't have it to put in. And there are other people who say, well, we spend all this money on the police, or we spend all this money on these other priorities. But there really is a huge disparity between what a Baltimore County or a Montgomery or Anne Arundel, any of the contiguous mm-hmm. counties, spend as opposed to the city.
Absolutely. So there's sort of two issues there. One is, how do you respond to a crisis that's happening before your eyes? When you see half of the city schools don't have heat at one point, that's a crisis. Is your impulse to try to do something to fix it immediately, or is it to blame others? And I think the mayor said, at first, maybe she did a little blaming, but then she decided, you know what, let's try to fix it, and did have a team of contractors come in over the weekend, and they did fix quite a few of the schools, not all of them, but quite a few. The second point, though, structurally speaking about funding, the city funds, as you noted, somewhere between 11 and 13% of their operating budget for the schools. That is by far the lowest of any jurisdiction in the state of Maryland. Most jurisdictions spend well over half their budget on their school system. The reason the city is able to do that is because the state funds most of the city schools. But what the state doesn't do is they do not fund the capital programs the same way they do the operating. So it ends up being that the city has much, much less money than the neighboring jurisdictions like, say, Baltimore County or Montgomery County for capital programs. They might get the same money from the state. Like, I was looking at Baltimore City and Baltimore County both get about $35 million, $40 million a year from the state. But then Baltimore County locally is putting in 10 times as much in maintenance. So if you're...
I remember a disagreement between Kevin Kamenetz, who's now running for governor against Larry Hogan, putatively, yes. and the governor concerning air conditioning at Baltimore yeah. County schools. So it's not like they're completely immune from these issues. By the way, as I understand it, right now the only school that's not opened, having been closed last week because of the cold, is Calverton Elementary Middle School. And there's conversations with the Archdiocese of Baltimore and to use Seton Keough, that campus, which is empty right now, to have those 600-plus students and faculty moved over there. Because, again, this is a school that is slated to be closed, right? Frank Pentinella, let me have you parse out for us these two issues, one of which is forward funding, to make sure people understand how that works, and partial funding, both of which play into this conversation and understanding of how this whole thing works.
Sure. In addition to money that is given to school districts from the state for school construction and repair and renovation, local districts give to their own school district. And as we said earlier, Anne Arundel County has, you know, somewhere over $100 million each year. Baltimore, the same thing. Montgomery County has over $200 million. Even Howard, a smaller district, has over $50 million, and the city has $17 million. So that local, higher local money, because of their wealth and their ability to incur debt and issue more bonds for school construction and infrastructure, they're able to use that money and pay for projects up front. And so when they get state money, it's a matter of simple reimbursement. They've already paid for the project. They already know how much it costs. They submit the project to the state, and the state issues them the check in the amount that they paid for. The city doesn't have that money. City schools doesn't have that money to be able to forward fund. So they have to get money, partial money, that yeah. the state gives.
And
right?
therein lies the problem. Right. And that's what Delegate McIntosh Correct. Is working on. Mm-hmm. That's what the city delegation is working right. on. And we got to call it a day here, Luke Browder. But very quickly, I mean, what do you see as the chances of this happening? I'll give you about 10 seconds to answer that.
That there's a fix on the state level? Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of public pressure on this. There's a heightened awareness raised on it. So I think something could be done. Absolutely.
Luke Broadwater is with the Baltimore Sun. Shamarla McCoy is a member of the Baltimore Education Coalition and the Director of Education Policy with Advocates for Children and Youth. She's also a former city school teacher. Frank Pentinella, senior advocate with the Education Reform Project with the ACLU of Maryland and the co-chair of the Baltimore Education Coalition. Thanks to you all. I very, very much appreciate it. We will obviously keep our eye on this.
Thank you.
A reminder that next Wednesday, Dr. Sonia Santelices, the CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools, will be my guest for the hour. We'll talk about some of the issues that we've raised today and more on what's in store for the school system this year. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll talk with Peter Chomey. He's the president and CEO of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, and Maren Alsop, the BSO's popular music director. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick has a review of Inherit the Wind at Vagabond Players. We'd like to thank Eddie's of Roland Park for providing lunch for our guests today. Eddie's is a full-service market with locations on North Charles Street and on Roland Avenue in Roland Park. Their deli features a variety of sandwiches and salads, all listed on their website, eddiesofrolandpark.com. www.thepublicradio.com. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of your calls and emails, but keep them cards and letters coming on Midday. Have a great day.